Anybody who sits in a diverse group is inherently, it's part of their identity, part of who they are. And nobody should ever feel that they have to hide parts of their identity or true self, or minimize them, or be essentially open in any environment, but particularly a work environment, I feel nowadays, to be put upon or labeled by lazy stereotypes.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Identity Architects, the InfoSum podcast that spotlights the leaders in the media industry shaping the future of data-driven advertising. I'm your host Ben Schetti, and this week I had the opportunity to sit down with Rachel Peace, Managing Director of Hearts & Science UK. I loved my conversation with Rachel. Not only did we discuss the current state of the industry, including the demise of third-party cookies, the rise of first-party data, and the critical focus on data privacy, but we also had the opportunity to talk about a topic we're both incredibly passionate about, DE&I. Before we jump into that conversation, this is your reminder to hit that subscribe button so you'll always be the first to know when the latest episodes of Identity Architects drop. But without any further delay, here's my chat with Rachel. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Rachel Peace, Managing Director at UK at Hearts & Science. Rachel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Ben.
For anyone who doesn't know you, can you give us a quick introduction to yourself and to Hearts & Science?
Well, as you say, I'm Rachel Peace. I am very privileged to be the UK Managing Director of Hearts & Science. We are a global media agency based in over 36 countries around the globe and part of the Omnicom family. I've got 20 plus years in media and communications working in various agencies. And as I say, currently UK Managing Director of Hearts & Science.
Amazing. I can't wait to dig into your experience and get your expertise on so many topics in the industry right now. But we'll kick things off the way we usually do, which is with a series of quickfire questions to get to know you a little bit better. Starting with, what is your earliest memory of advertising?
Great question, by the way. And I've loved all the questions that you've kind of running through today. But this was a really interesting one because I grew up in the northwest of the UK in quite a rural area. So my media and advertising consumption was a little, probably very different from what I experienced today living in the heart of London. And we lived in a very rural area and we were very out and about a lot. But one thing that really kind of goes through all my kind of early childhood memories is radio and being part of, you know, listening to radio ads and various other things. So I do remember quite a few of the kind of early noughties radio jingles and ads really stick in my brain and do bring back they flood quite a lot of my childhood memories. And there's that, and there's probably, again, thinking about where I grew up and the kind of media consumption that was essentially going on around me, local press was a big thing. You know, it was a really good connector. My parents were both working full-time with very demanding jobs, but I do remember the local paper being kind of poured over every week. So that's probably my two earliest memories of advertising.
I love that. And if you take yourself back to that childhood in the Northwest, what did you want to be when you were growing up? What did you want to be when you were younger?
Yeah, again, this was like, I was trying to go back in time and really think about how I was feeling when I was a young child going into early adulthood. We were a very outdoorsy family and very sporty family. For me, it was probably swimming. I wanted to be a swimmer. I swam competitively as a child into early teens, late teens. So represented my county and various other things. So it was probably a swimmer. And then I kind of moved further through my education journey and kind of left that behind. But I'm a big water baby. I'm very happy if I'm in the water.
That's awesome. I love that. So I guess, you know, with the aspirations of being a swimmer, what then drew you into the advertising marketing? What was your first job in advertising and marketing?
Great question. So I went off to university, went and did something very different, went and did a law degree, and then finished up my law degree and came back to home to my parents' house and announced that law maybe wasn't for me, but I had no idea about what I actually wanted to do. A really great and fulfilling conversation for all parties involved, as you can imagine. And so I actually at the time kind of, I think it's quite familiar and I speak to a lot of colleagues about this. I kind of fell into advertising. When I go and have a chat with some of the people that, you know, I was around at university, they said, look, you know, you might not want to do law as a job, but it's giving you a lot of skill sets that are actually really relevant for lots of sectors. So they said, have you thought about advertising, communications, marketing? So I poured through the jobs ads back in the day and applied, and then ended up, got my first ever job at a company called Walker Media in the UK, which was an independent at the time. Subsequently became Blue 449, and then became part of the Publicis Group, and it's now moved into Spark Foundry, so part of that family. So I started off there. I was one of their first ever grad intakes. So I think there was eight of us in total, which feels a very, very long time ago, but it's such an exciting place to start.
Yeah, that does sound super exciting. A great place to kind of kick off your career. What do you think it is then about the industry that, you know, keeps you in? What keeps you excited about the industry?
Yeah. Again, I don't come from a family or have, apart from the friends that I've made through my time working in the industry, but I had no real understanding about a marketing and communication industry. And for me, it's just the phenomenal exciting of working in a creative environment and one that you can really express yourself and join big conversations, big societal conversations, which I think is really, 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 you know, keeps me on my toes and keeps the teams on their toes. And what I love about it as well is we all know this, whether you work in the industry or not, great marketing and communications is talked about at every level. And to be part of that and to be, you know, working in an industry that inspires that, that essentially keeps you going through the maybe some of the not so nice moments in any job, but it definitely keeps you going, keeps me wanting to kind of move forward in the industry.
Yeah, I bet. And I guess if you take all that experience that you've had, you know, coming in your first role and kind of where you are today, what would you say to someone who's just starting out in their career in media and advertising?
Wow, I probably could sit in front of them for about an hour and probably list out a whole load of things. Yeah. So that's probably not a meeting they'd actually want to take. That's probably not the right thing to do. I think it probably boils down to maybe like three things. I think for me, it's about always open to learning. You know, the place I've ended up is not the place I thought I'd end up when I started my career. And that's because I've kind of looked, watched, and kept myself open to opportunities. I think that's a big thing. The second thing is about how you look and find role models and mentors that you want to be part of and work with. And I think that's really important. Go towards those people. You know, I'm not saying, you know, just in a work environment. It could be about how they run teams. It could be about how they interact with certain things. It could be about how they bring to life their cultural and passion points. So go towards those people, spend time with those people, surround yourself with those people. And the third one was a piece of advice that I actually learned probably like 5 or 6 years ago, and it really struck home with me. It was given to me by the great Jo Arden. She talked about, when I was working with her at WPP, she talked about the fact that you should put the pressure should be put on the task, not on yourself. Mm. And I think that's something really important that we all need to learn in any sphere of life, in any professional career. There's always going to be pressure and there's going to be really tough moments. And I think what we need to learn is make sure that we're just putting the real pressure on the task, on the job in hand, not on ourselves, because that's when things can really start falling down.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice.
My final one, if I had anyone, would probably be, again, if I went back and started myself, is start a pension.
Yeah.
Like, don't ignore those things. They sound really boring, but, go and do that, because kind of financial independence for anybody is a really big thing. And if I could go back and have that conversation with my 20-odd-year-old self, I would definitely be doing that.
Yeah, that's definitely great advice. I'm fortunate I came before I worked at InfoSum. I actually came from a fintech business, which dealt in retirement and other investments. And so it was ingrained in me almost immediately, the importance of that. So yeah, I definitely.
The eighth wonder of the world, compound interest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really wish I'd learned about it in my 20s, not in my late 30s.
Yeah, for sure. I can appreciate that. I think, you know, we work in such a complex industry and it can often be hard for even us to kind of keep up with the ever-going changes. How would you describe what you do within media and advertising to a 10-year-old?
I love this question because I have 10-year-olds in my life. One of the first people I joined with Walker Media is still my best friend today. We actually, ironically, are now work in the same building 20 odd years later, which is fantastic. And her 10-year-old daughter is a big part of my life, and we spend a lot of time together. So we have a lot. I have a lot of conversations with her about what her mum does, and it's you have to go through that. And one thing I've discovered with her, and we discovered it over the summer. She's a big artist. She's an amazing artist. So we went and spent some time in some art galleries around London. And so I was talking about the fact that actually a lot of our job is about being like almost like a museum exhibition, you know, curator. That we're maybe not making the art, that's not our job, but we are there to really think about what the audience, how we want that audience to interact with that exhibition, how we want them to flow through the journey of that exhibition, where we want everything to sit in that exhibition, and it's all got a place and it's got a real kind of purpose to it, and how we want that audience to feel and think about when they leave the exhibition. So that seemed to work for her. And I've also found it works at the other end of the generation scale as well. If I'm trying to explain it once again to my parents and family, it does seem to work as a bit of an analogy.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. I've never heard it described like that. I think that's absolutely fantastic. I might actually steal that. I think that's a really, really good
way to describe it.
So from a business perspective, how do you stay inspired? You know, we live in such an industry of change. It can obviously get on top of anyone at any time. How do you stay inspired and motivated?
Brilliant question. I think it's down to people. It's a real people industry. I have been very fortunate in my 20 plus years career to work with some phenomenal people that are still either in my lives or inspired me today. I love being part of an agency. I'm very privileged to be part of an agency and lead an agency as well. And just spending time with the individuals that I work with at Hearts and Science really inspires me today. I have a true belief that life's lived in the small moments. So those interactions that I have on a daily basis, however bad or good I am feeling, or I always feel inspired by the time I get to the end of the day and I'm ready, you know, either to go home or close the laptop, because I get to work with a phenomenally brilliant, diverse bunch of people who make me think, feel, and really challenge me to kind of be better and bring myself to work, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's crazy how often people come up as in response to that question, right? It's so important. Yeah. The people we work with are what make the jobs at the end of the day. You know, you can move from company to company, but actually it's the people that you will remember, not the task you did that day or the job that you did that week. So people are just such an incredible part of it. Moving on to the final quickfire question. It's my favorite quickfire question because it always gives me a unique insight into the people that I'm getting to meet. If there was a song that was a soundtrack to your life, what would it be?
I think we talked about this a little bit earlier. This is the one that I think I've really tripped on the most. And I think you said this is the same that you see time and time again. My husband, family and friends would describe my musical taste as horrific. I think it's actually been described as that, both to my face and in wider circles. And I was trying to think of lots of different ways that I could do this, and music that's inspired me and music that I love and various other things. But then I thought, I'm just going to take the question literally and think about, you know, music or soundtracks that have been part of my life since day dot. And when I think about that, I mentioned about the fact that radio is a big part of my family's life and various other things. It would be the soundtrack to The Archers, which is the UK the world's longest running radio soap. And I have heard that probably in the womb and beyond, definitely from my grandmother into my mother and now into myself, so I play it all the time. So there's something about that piece of music and that soundtrack that has definitely been part of my life, and it gives me a very homely, you know, very warm feeling whenever I hear it.
Yeah, that's a great response. It's a very British thing, I think, and we'll definitely have to add it. I'm assuming it'll be on Spotify. We have a playlist for all these songs, and so I'm hoping I can track it down on Spotify and add it. My dad listened to The Archers religiously, so I always heard it on a daily basis. So that's
absolutely. And I think maybe because I'm a country girl, born and bred, so maybe it's the country girl in me coming out. I'm sure for your global listeners, it will be a little bit weird, but I think any UK person that hears it knows exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And it there's something very, very guttural and thought-provoking about it. There's something very lovely about it. So yeah, so that would be, it would be on my desert island playlist, and it would definitely be the soundtrack of my life.
That's brilliant. Yeah, well, hopefully we can add that to the playlist and people can give it a listen, and we'll introduce a whole new demographic of people outside of the UK to that song, which is...
It's a great soap. I listen every week.
Fantastic. So moving on to some of the more topic-related questions, and I guess starting with the biggest topic in our industry right now, which is the impending deprecation of third-party cookies in Chrome. How is Hearts and Science approaching the cookieless future at the moment?
As you said, huge topic. For us in Hearts and Science, we're less than 7 years old in the UK. So we were born in the digital age, and we've been speaking particularly on this subject with our clients and our partners since day one of our inception. And for us, it's about really finding a holistic solution and approach to answering kind of industry challenges and changes. We really try and move away from finding single source solutions, or silver bullets, as we call it. And for us, particularly in this area, it's about almost having a look at as a roadmap and a three-stage approach. And the first one is about educating and really understanding and having a very transparent conversation with our clients about the implications of cookie deprecation on their activity now. So understanding how it sits within their ecosystem and their current activity. And then it's about finding what attitudinal, behavioral and motivational opportunities exist for us to look at targeting and measurement moving forward for them to gain competitive advantage as quickly as possible. The second part of that is about helping them identify how they can fully embrace their paid, owned and earned. I think that's, you know, that paid, owned and earned kind of point is something that has been talked about in the industry for a long time. But I think we're really keen about making sure that that's really at the heart of what we talk about with clients, because, again, that goes back to helping us build really robust and quantifiable roadmaps about sustainable growth post third party cookie, and really about how we can look about that overall ecosystem and make it work for them. And finally, for us, it's about building out a suite of privacy first solutions and measurement solutions in that space, whether that's bespoke, so whether we're co-creating that with clients, which, you know, is a big part of what we do, or whether that's something like we're using a solution like Omni, which is OMG's proprietary precision marketing platform. You know, all of those things, that's a spectrum that we work with, and some clients use both. But for us, it's about having a look about, you know, making sure that we are having a measurement solution so we can really kind of ensure that everybody's looking forward, not looking back.
Yeah, that's a great approach. And I think taking that holistic approach and not having tunnel vision is incredibly important. Taking a step back, looking at the bigger picture. And obviously, anytime we talk about third-party cookies, it inevitably comes to a conversation around first-party data. So as we leave the cookieless era, we move into the first-party data era, we move into the privacy-first era. How do you see Hearts and Science and your clients positioned in market compared to others in the industry when it comes to first-party data?
Again, we try and steer our clients away of trying to find a single source solution. So we do have clients and partners that come to us and say first party data is the solution to third party cookie deprecation. And we're like, we need to have a wider conversation about this, because for us, only focusing on first party data solution, it really worries us that you could essentially create a new nightmare for clients. It's essentially, it could be that you're just recreating that, you know, third party cookie deprecation mark two, and we don't want clients to do that. It's not a forward looking or fit for the future solution. So for us, it's about making sure that we really pride ourselves with working with clients about looking at how, particularly on first party data, how we can enrich that further by looking at diverse data sources or other relevant data sources, be it that attitudinal, motivational, behavioral, how we can bring that to life and how we can enrich that further to really make sure it's essentially fit for the future. And I think our talent and our age has got a big part to play in that, in this approach. It's a big factor about how we look at the world. because we're essentially free from the traditional legacies and setups and ways of working and the way that maybe other agencies approach things. And I think for us, it's about making sure that, particularly in our agency, our people are our strongest asset for working with clients. And we continuously invest energy, resource, time to making sure they've got the fundamentals and they understand the entire journey of how that can work. Be it, you know, how we look at, you know, using data and first party data for insight generation, for planning, how you then take that through to activation and optimization, and then moving forward into the measurement solutions. I think, you know, that full funnel piece and ways of looking is a really different approach that I've seen and we're really proud of versus other agencies or other partners in the market.
Yeah, that's super important. And it strikes a chord when you talk about, you know, obviously you're fortunate to be born not tied to some of the legacy that other agencies may be tied to. It's something that we talk about at InfoSum. You know, we were born in the, you know, to be cookieless, we were born in the first party data era. We were born in the privacy first era. So we don't have any of the baggage that other systems might have when they're trying to essentially pivot. We were born ready for this. So it's definitely a luxury to have, for sure.
And it's a huge brilliance that you can essentially bring, because it essentially allows you to really think holistically and future first. You're not trying to, as you say, reimagine how your ecosystem essentially works to fit to face into the challenge.
Yeah, definitely, completely agree. As an industry, we can be so obsessed with data driven that we forget what that data represents, which is consumers. And we've touched on privacy a lot already. How can we keep consumers front of mind? And how do you do that at Hearts and Science? And remember that using that data to power advertising is a privilege for us and not a right that we have inherently.
I love this question, by the way. It's something that we speak about a lot at Hearts and Science. There's no getting around it. Data undoubtedly helps us make better decisions. It helps us understand customer behavior and trends, and it helps us improve overall business delivery for our clients. You know, that's without doubt. However, solely relying on that is also highly dangerous, and we would never recommend that to ourselves or our clients or any business or any consultancy piece that we work with. For us, because data only can capture what's measurable currently at the moment, and what it can't capture, or you know, can't capture as well as, is the intangible aspects that make up consumers, essentially human behavior and psychology. It can't capture emotions, beliefs, value systems, which are crucial. We all know are crucial, and there's great bodies of research that say about how crucial it is about decision making. Particularly when we're working with our clients and when they're actually looking about how they take a brand right through to sale. And so for us at Hearts and Science, and I think our name kind of gives it away as well, is about really about, we work hard about finding the right balance, where how we use data as a tool to help us really inform decisions, but also we make sure that we are really leaning heavily into the media craft. There is craft in media, and it's really important, again, that we look at our talent and invest time and energy into our talent to make sure that craft is as brilliant as possible and allow them to use their craft, their skills and their intuition to really generate insights that are both scientifically accurate, but also connect emotionally with consumers too. Which then takes you on to the second part of the question, which is about, you know, the privilege of data. And we, again, spend a lot of time on this, and we spend a lot of time speaking with our clients. And there's a difference between compliancy and ethics for us in this space. And it's about, just because we can do something doesn't mean we should do it.
Yeah.
Because, as you say, we are working with consumers, and they are very, you know, at your peril, you say that consumers are not savvy about data and about how their data is being used. And you only have to get it wrong once for them to cut their entire relationship with the brand. So it is a massive privilege, and we spend a lot of time, and Omnicom, and therefore, you know, Hearts and Science being part of the group, have always been at the forefront of consistently prioritizing responsible, compliant data practices, even before the industry kind of caught up with that, it's been a big part of their value system and a big part of our value system from day one. So again, as I say, we spend a lot of time thinking about what we should do, not what we can do.
I think it's so important. You know, the consumer often can feel like they're not part of the conversation because they're often not in the room at these industry events and stuff. But we're all consumers, and therefore we should all think about how we would hope to be treated. And consumer awareness is at an all-time high, right? Consumers are more aware than ever how their data is being used and collected. And I always say, you know, every brand, media company, CEO, it should be their, you know, their living nightmare to see their name appear in the next headline for the next big data leakage or the next big data misuse. So every CEO should be concerned about data privacy and make it an absolute priority.
One of the things we talk about within the teams, that we talk about at industry events, we talk about with clients, we talk about with partners, is the number one stakeholder in all of this is consumers.
Yeah.
That's what we've got to remember, because it is a relationship and it's a trusted relationship. And as we say, consumers have never been more savvy about how their data is being used. They understand there is a brilliant benefit for them if it's used in a fantastic way to build a better service or relationship with a brand. But as I say, it just takes one data breach, misuse, or essentially, you know, that name appearing for consumers. They are very, very savvy, and they will vote very quickly with their feet or their pounds spent.
Yeah, I agree. You alluded to it in that question, actually, which is, you know, with the name Hearts and Science, you obviously encapsulate the two sides of marketing, which I love, the art of marketing and the science of marketing. As an agency, how do you strike that balance, and what tends to take priority when you have your clients coming to you?
It shifts, I would say. That's the great thing about having Hearts and Science in the name. Yeah. It's a name that I absolutely love, because it really feels like it is what we are. And we, you know, it definitely talks about what we do on a day-to-day basis. For us, we support our clients by looking at the most efficient solutions, which are happening in an increasingly complex media landscape. So it's about fusing both together and about using really the craft of communications planning. And it is a craft, and I will continually fight to make sure that people are investing in that craft. And then how we prioritize the science to build together to essentially get the best solutions for our client. And it's not about prioritizing one or the other, but there are at times where you look at briefs and you look at campaigns, and it's all about the emotional connection, and that's what we need to focus on. Or alternatively, it could all be about how we kind of optimize data and efficiencies for clients. So you end up with either campaigns or clients that do go down, potentially maybe lean to one or the other. But we do overall, and we've had a look at the work that we're generating, particularly in the UK, it is the kind of the brilliance of bringing both gets you to a phenomenal solution.
I love digging into kind of the meaning behind names. So, you know, I've seen Hearts and Science for a long time, and I've always assumed that was the meaning behind the name. So, you know, it's great to kind of have that confirmed. The name InfoSum, for anyone that's listening, actually comes from the phrase, the sum is greater than its parts. And because we believe in collaboration, we believe that if we can all collaborate, the outcome will be better, the performance will be better. And so that's where the name InfoSum was born. So, yeah,
it's always great
to get to those meanings.
It is. I think it's so important as well. I know we're going to talk about it a bit later, but particularly when you're running agencies and teams, having something that people galvanize around. And I know it sounds so simple about the name of the company that you work for, but it's a big thing. You know, yeah. I think it really helps people understand about where you want to go as a business and also what they can bring to the party. I think it really helps kind of galvanize that kind of true focus. So, yeah, Hearts and Science is a phenomenal name, and I definitely feel we live it day in, day out.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And speaking of day in and day out, you know, in your role as MD, you must be exposed on a regular basis to exciting technology and emerging technology that can optimize both the art and the science of marketing. Is there a technology trend right now that is particularly exciting to you?
Well, I don't think you could talk about 2024 without mentioning AI.
Yeah, there you go. I know
because I've listened to a couple of the episodes. I'm sure it's definitely been mentioned before. But I think AI combined with marketing and comms and how it's transforming brands, agencies and partners is a really exciting area. And we're definitely seeing, it feels like it was definitely heavily discussed in 2023. It's now getting to real tangible and scalable solutions, which is really exciting that we're seeing, not only in Hearts and Science, but in Omnicom and having a look about as the totality of that. I think also, you know, if I think about two other areas that are kind of really quite exciting for me currently at the moment, it feels like the tech advantage around driving attention, both from a creative and media effectiveness, is now becoming established mainstream, but is actually going through an element of regrowth again. Because I think, again, it feels like that's a kind of a point that is, marketers are definitely kind of being very well versed in, are understanding the effects of it now. The body of evidence and science around attention is growing all the time. And it definitely feels like a conversation they can have at their board level and make boards understand from a financial perspective, but as well feels like how they can really gain a competitive advantage in their sector or in the industry by understanding about how consumers are now looking at this, as I mentioned before, this ever complex and ever growing marketing and media landscape. And then the other one is about kind of carbon reducing technologies that we're seeing, which means that advertising can very significantly reduce the carbon footprint of their media campaigns and advertising campaigns rather than just offsetting it. I think that's all three of those are really exciting, and I've definitely seen a big rise in that in 2024. But I think it comes back to the point I've made probably throughout, and that's about measurement. I think with all of these trends, I think that it's really important that we really understand and measure the effectiveness. And those companies and partners that are developing really holistic measurement solutions that kind of really can measure those technology trends and keep pace with that, with the, you know, the scale and the size of trends growing, are the ones that are going to win out in the future.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's interesting to always look at the trends we're seeing in the industry right now. And we often find that trends that emerge shape the requests that then come from clients across the board. And you know, the best example I can think of was in 2023, when everyone was discussing and exploring retail media. What is the current trend that's shaping the requests you and your team are getting at Hearts and Science? Is it measurement?
Measurement is a big one. It's one that we speak about a lot with clients. We speak a lot about, and it's not just marketing clients. We speak about that with CFOs. We speak about that with CEOs. It's a big one. They want to understand what their marketing and media spends are essentially driving back to the business. Yeah. And what I find is that CFOs, boards of big clients or the clients that we work with are really excited about marketing and really want to heavily lean in. They just want to understand what it's doing for them as a business, rightly so. You can't be an effective managing director, CEO, CFO, if you're not understanding where your money's getting spent. Yeah. I don't think retail media has reached anywhere near its peak. I think we're now seeing the second wave of clients coming through retail media. It's a very exciting space and it's only gaining momentum. And I think it's now, there's a lot of joining the dots, and you can see the great relationships that are essentially starting to come into play. Particularly when you speak to, you know, media partners here in the UK, when you start to see about how they're kind of joining up with other partners in terms of the retail media space, it becomes very exciting, and that becomes a really interesting journey that we can take clients on. Shoppable and frictionless free and commerce and social commerce, big part of what we're saying, big part of conversations we're having. Exciting world for us to move forward with, have definitely got scale and size now behind it as well. And I think that's ever going to grow. And I think for us, it's all about the full funnel. You know, clients are wanting to really look at their full funnel eco experiences and relationships that they have with consumers. So that's probably the areas that we're definitely getting, are having conversations about, whether it be briefs or it's, you know, a chat over, you know, a coffee somewhere with clients. It's really exciting. It's a really exciting time to be around.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like there's so many trends happening right now and so many possibilities for where the industry can go. I agree. I think it's a super exciting period that we're living through right now. Switching away from the trends in data-driven advertising and to a topic that I know is near and dear to both of our hearts around diversity, equity, and inclusion. So a bit of a backstory. Last year, InfoSum actually hosted an LGBTQ plus event, which was fantastic. And I talked about how embracing diversity is not only important from like a societal perspective, but it's actually better for business and it's proven to drive better results. And clearly it goes beyond gender and ethnicity. It's about people being able to be their true authentic self every single day inside and outside of work. And I'd love to dig into why it's a passion area for you, but also for any business leaders listening, why should they be just as passionate about DE&I as we are?
I think you've already started to talk about it in the question that you've just posed, is why embracing, not just embracing, championing, celebrating, and really driving change is so important. Ultimately, for anybody who sits in a diverse group, and I myself are neurodiverse, I describe myself as delightfully dyslexic. That's the way that, you know, I show up in the world. But anybody who sits in a diverse group is inherently, it's part of their identity. It's part of who they are. And nobody should ever feel that they have to hide parts of their identity or true self or minimize them or be essentially open in any environment, but particularly a work environment, I feel nowadays, to be kind of put upon or labeled by lazy stereotypes. I think that's really important. And we feel, and I know as a senior leadership team, we definitely feel very passionately about the fact that we have a big responsibility to ensure that people don't experience any of that. You know, that's a huge thing. You know, either being part of a diverse group or not, I think it's a huge responsibility that leaders need to take on and understand, because it's a really important point about how we can drive the most diverse. And as you say, you know, whether you look at it from either a work perspective in terms of the work that we're putting out in the world, whether we look at it from the client relationships that we're working with, because that's really important, again, whether, you know, essentially the relationships can build from that, or whether you're really just sitting in the commercial area and going, how can I make my business be more commercially viable? Having a diverse workforce and different ways and thinking is a really big part of how you can do that. So I think for us, you know, at HOTS and at OMG, we put a significant amount of budget and time into training people in all areas of DE&I. And it's important that we make sure that individuals have something that they can obviously bring to the workplace and be part of that, but as well, make sure that that kind of also can fall outside of the workplace as well and potentially go into other areas that can drive further passion points. So for example, we have a number of, trained mental health first aiders at HEARTS. And their skills have been brilliant about helping, people within HEARTS or within OMG, but they've taken that outside of work as well. That's, you know, had some really profound effects about passion points that they want to bring and about who they want to kind of look at, or friends and family. They've helped friends and family in some of their areas. And I think that's really important. Or for example, OMG Women, fantastic group. I was at one of their sessions yesterday. They ran a talk series about perimenopausal solutions and also kind of the effects of the perimenopause. And again, we had a large number of male attendees to that, because again, it's important that everybody leans into that, because whether it's going to affect you, it will essentially, you know, people want to be there as strong allies to either friends or family or partners. So for us, it's about how we do that. And we definitely need to role model that from the top.
Yeah, I think that's super important. I agree on, we have a couple of ERGs here at InfoSum. We have a Women of InfoSum ERG, and we also have an LGBTQ plus network. And I'm always super excited and thrilled when I see how many allies attend, right? Because it's just so important. It's an opportunity for them to build an education, to build an empathy for the challenges that different people face. Because as you say, they then take that outside of work, and people they meet outside of work is just as important. So yeah, I think it's incredibly important. I'm excited and kind of thrilled to hear how much is happening at OMG, but also obviously specifically at Hearts and Science. What do you think is needed then for organizations and people to be fully open to a broader diversity across teams? Is it education? Is it internal awareness? Is it external awareness? Or is it something completely different that I've not mentioned?
I think education and awareness is critical first steps in the journey. But I think we've talked about it a lot again at Hearts and Science about we want to move to the next stage. And for us, it's about positive advocacy, allyship, and action. Without education awareness, you can't do anything. Yeah. You need people to really, you know, do that first step. And again, that needs to mean that organizations and leadership teams need to lean in hard to that. It can't just be go and attend this workshop and we'll tick a box. You've actively got to make sure that you are leaning in hard and you are constantly educating yourself. There is a lot of self-education in all areas that essentially needs to come up. But for us, it's about when we talk about allyship, and our fantastic Chief Experience Officer, Amy Matthews, is somebody that, again, massively inspires me on a daily basis. But she talks about the fact that for us, it, again, it's the three A's. You know, we talk about positive advocacy, allyship, and action, and they're intrinsically linked together. And for us, it's about making sure it's really about how we can drive the most positive action for everybody and an allyship. And they're all kind of very clearly interlinked. It can be exhausting for anybody that sits in a diverse group to take on, to be the only voice that potentially could be talking around this subject and to take that full burden on. And for us, it's about allyship needs to come with some helping them kind of not remove that burden, but taking some of the weight and actually making sure that they're actually creating positive change through what they're doing. And collectively, I think we will get to a better solution overall.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so important. Outside of organizations, and you know, given we're in the media and advertising industry, what role do you think advertising can or should play in embracing diversity and spreading diversity?
Brilliant question once again. I was thinking about this. So I obviously joined the industry 20 odd years ago. I would say and you asked me a question earlier on about what advice I would give somebody who's joining the industry today. I think anybody who's joining the industry today or essentially is sitting in the industry now at whatever level, if they don't think that it's your job to embrace, celebrate and promote diversity, this is the wrong industry for you. You shouldn't be. You definitely won't have a future at Hearts. And I think it's just the wrong industry for you, because arguably it's the biggest and most seismic impact that we can make as media practitioners. And whether that's on a commercial level, whether that's an industry level, or whether that's a societal point of view as well, you know, the sense of purpose that we can bring. And I think I talked about it at the start. We have a real opportunity to be part of the bigger conversation, to be part of cultural conversations. Take that responsibility seriously, really lean into that, understand and enjoy it and have a real passion point about it. Because, you know, if you look at any studies or any, you know, if you speak to your friends, if you speak to your family, people speak very openly about the importance of seeing people that look and talk and sound and really talk about like lived experiences like them.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it has a huge impact on their lives and it has a huge impact about how they feel and want to take forward and play it forward. And I think we can do so much in our industry to help normalize diversity in a society with more broadly, essentially.
Yeah, I agree. I think it can sometimes be underestimated that the influence and the power that the media industry has to shape public perception, to normalize areas of diversity. So it's incredibly exciting to hear kind of how passionate you are about it. And I think it's great advice for anyone coming into this industry now is, you know, as you say, unless they're willing to kind of embrace that, it's probably not the right place for them, and it's probably not going to be a particularly successful or joyful career for sure.
It would definitely not be the right place at Hearts, because it's a big part of who we are and as a leadership team. It, OMG, the same. I think for us, it's, you know, if you, I always feel that you should have, you know, a passion and a purpose about the jobs that you do. And that can change over time. My passion and purpose has definitely changed from probably my younger days to where I am now. But I think if you're not having that purpose, and for me, that purpose is really about how I can make the biggest societal impact in what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis. I come from a family of social workers and teachers and educators, and my husband's an engineer. They're making huge societal changes, and they always kind of slightly looked at me a little bit like I'm doing a kind of a very like fancy but, you know, kind of frivolous job over there. Actually, no, you can really pivot that now. There is a great privilege that we have by being media practitioners, that we can not only affect how advertising looks on the outside, but again, we speak to a lot of clients in lots of broad ranges of sectors on a daily basis. We can also start to change some of the conversations they're having internally in their businesses as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's an outside in scenario as well as an outside inside out scenario that you can essentially look at. And that's, again, that's a real privilege. And I take that, and we take that at Hearts very seriously.
Yeah, I love that. And I can feel your passion about it. So, you know, I'm feeling really good. And it's a great, great conversation to be having. I guess it's a tough question to ask, but how can we work towards a future where each and every person is accepted for being who they are, both inside and outside of the workplace?
I think it's a really good, really good question. I think firstly, as leaders, we've got to start sharing our stories. I think that's a really important part. I've talked about the fact that, you know, in the last 2 years, I've started sharing my dyslexic story and journey of what I've gone through. That's been a very enriching experience on lots of levels, both personally and about the people I've interacted with. But it's also highlighted to me some real failings in the system. It's been quite upsetting at times in terms of hearing people's terrible experiences and the shame, the fear, the worry that they have, particularly women with neurodiversity. You know, again, I think we need to make sure that we're really calling out the intersectionality that exists in our world. And one of the conversations that we've been having at a senior level is about, you know, what our own intersectionalities are and how we can talk about those more openly. So for myself, I'm a northern neurodiverse woman, but I'm also a white university educated heterosexual. There are some really interesting aspects that we can call out, and I need to keep on educating, and we need to keep on educating ourselves for that. So the first one's sharing our stories. And we do that quite a lot at heart. So I talked about my dyslexia. Amy's talked about her anxiety journey and mental health journey and various other pieces. And again, we've got, you know, pockets of people that talk about that quite openly. The second one is about how we use our resources and budget to make sure that we are putting our money where our mouth is. I always say to people, judge me on my actions. Judge me on how you feel at the end of this, not about what I say. Because we need to make sure that we are actively leaning in and modeling the right behavior to make sure that we're getting change through. And for us, it's about making sure that we are really listening. You know, diversity will change with the individuals themselves, and we know that individuals change all the time. And for us, you know, we very much want to lean into those conversations and have people, as I say, it shouldn't be down to the burden of them carrying those conversations, but we need to make sure that we are openly listening so we can really find solutions. But they've got to feel like they've got a safe space to have that conversation with us in the first place. So I think those are the kind of the core areas of what we need to do. But it is an education, and as any leader in any industry, but particularly in the advertising industry, part of being a leader is you need to take the responsibility yourself. You need to take the responsibility that you are going to actively learn on a daily basis. If you think you know everything, again, you're probably not the right leader. And you're probably not the right leader for me. And I definitely feel that here at Hearts. I've, again, we talked about it right at the start about the people you work with. I'm incredibly lucky to work with a group of individuals that actively challenge me on a daily basis and make me want to learn and be better and be the leader that is right for them and right for the future.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a, you know, you've encapsulated so perfectly there. And, you know, your point around visibility really kind of resonates. It's something that I take very seriously as an LGBTQ plus leader is, you know, being as visible as I can be, because I recognize that I also have a huge amount of privilege as a white cis man that other people in the LGBTQ plus community don't have. So it's how can I use my visibility and my privilege to shine a light on the challenges that others are facing. And I just think it's incredibly important. As you say, I think I would hope the most modern leaders will have that and will continue to kind of push that in the years to come, for sure.
Again, I think as well, what I'm really, I think we've talked about this, what I'm really proud of, I look around my contemporaries and I definitely see that. And as well, I said it right at the start, go towards people, you know, that inspire. I go towards those people. Those are the people that I think. So it's brilliant. I definitely have those around it. But again, it's also about making sure that we're doing that. We're, as an agency, we're privileged that we work with partners, we work with clients, we work with, you know, as agencies, we're running teams of people, that we're having those open conversations with our clients as well and how we can help them on their journeys, or they can help us on our journeys. That's the other thing as well, you know, that's a two-way relationship, which again has been really brilliant for us to kind of keep on moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. That's brilliant. I feel like we've covered a lot on this podcast, and this has been, you know, a fantastic conversation. It's definitely been an inspiring conversation for me personally. Is there anything we haven't touched on that you wanted to touch on? Anything we haven't mentioned that you wanted to add?
I think we've talked about a lot, haven't we? It's kind of part podcast, part therapy. Thank you for listening and us having this conversation. I feel, again, like you, really inspired by it. But there's so many different areas that we've covered. So, I don't think there is anything else that we haven't covered that I would want to talk about now.
No, that's perfect. So this podcast obviously is all about people like yourself who have pioneered new ways to use data to drive better customer experiences, drive data-driven customer experiences. So when you look at people that you admire in the industry, who would you nominate for us to interview on an upcoming episode?
I think a little bit like the music one, this is the one that kind of stumped me the most, and I could give you a shopping list of brilliant people that you could do. And I think we talked about it just before the recording. There are a lot of people that have already been guests on the podcast. So I was like, oh, that cuts down my list slightly, but it didn't help massively. Firstly, we've got a fantastic range of clients to speak to, whether that be Paul Rogers at Go.Compare or Ross Sargent at Orwin or Charles Quirky at Peloton, all fantastic people, all brilliant kind of practitioners in marketing. There are probably two other people that I would also say as well. I know we talked about AI, but I'm going to as well nominate a fellow neurodiverser in Sean Betts. Sean is our Chief Product and Technology Officer at OMG in the UK. He's a brilliant AI advocate and also has a lot of kind of, you know, comes with a lot of brilliant expertise in the area. And the final person that I would, I'd love you to speak to is Karen Boswell. Karen is a Chief Experience Officer at VML, which I was privileged enough to work with Karen when we worked on Boots Walgreens together. And Karen, for me, has a very different take on Chief Experience Officer, is ridiculously customer focused. She got me into a passion point about human-centered design and customer thinking, and a little bit like the list I've just said, is one of not only just a brilliant mind, but a brilliant person too.
Amazing. Those are fantastic nominations, and we will definitely be reaching out to each and every one of them when they hear this on the podcast to see if we can get them on a future episode. I'm so appreciative for you joining us on this podcast. And I'm so appreciative to Jayesh Rajdev from ITV, who actually nominated you to be on the podcast. So shout out to Jay for giving you the nomination for this. This has been a fantastic conversation, an inspiring conversation. I appreciate all your insight, all your experience in the industry, and just really appreciate the conversation. Thank you for being on the podcast, Rachel.
Well, thank you. It's been a brilliant, I feel exactly the same in terms of the conversation we've had this afternoon. So thank you and good luck with future episodes.
Thanks again to Rachel for joining us. Not only did Rachel provide incredible insight into how Hearts & Science and its clients are tackling the ever-shifting media landscape, but her passion for diversity, equity, and inclusion was undeniable and left me incredibly inspired. All that leaves me to do is to remind you to hit that subscribe button so you'll know when the next episode of Identity Architects lands. But until then, thanks for listening.